Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes.
I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Dr. Teresa Cullen, the Chief Information Officer of the Indian Health Service within the Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Cullen also is a Rear Admiral with the U.S. Public Health Service, so welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for having me on.
I know you've been on before, so we appreciate the return engagement. It's always good to catch up with people. Let's talk briefly about the mission of the Indian Health Service. I think people maybe have some understanding of it, but you guys, when I was doing some research, you guys seem to have a fairly broad mission.
We do have a broad mission. We're obviously under Health and Human Services, though our budget authority is through the Department of Interior. And we are a public health agency designed to raise the physical, mental, social, and spiritual health of American Indians and Alaska Natives. As part of that mission, we do a comprehensive healthcare delivery system, and we also do things like build buildings, sanitation, engineering in the communities. We do this in 36 states throughout the United States in approximately 400 villages and or clinic facilities that are either operated directly by the Indian Health Service or operated by the tribes through what is called Indian Healthcare Self-Determination.
And your job as CIO, obviously, is to support those 36 states, those 400 facilities, plus everything else you do. How does that work? Because that's a pretty big job.
Oh, it's a really big job. We, in fact, run the largest bandwidth in the department because we're in so many facilities in so many states. And as part of that, we obviously confront issues that are not typical, for instance, in the Washington, D.C. area. We're in probably the most remote areas of America. We're providing not only direct patient care, but helping to assure that patients have access to comprehensive care, which in many villages can result in a helicopter or a life flight out into a tertiary care center. So as part of the CIO, I'm responsible for ensuring that not only do we run a health information technology system, an electronic health record, but ensuring that there's adequate bandwidth, adequate support for both the telephone infrastructure, the wireless infrastructure, and for the communication between not only the patients and the providers, but provider to provider. So it's, it's a daunting task. Our agency, however, has done well over the years in a fiscally constrained environment where you've been able to really effectively leverage our investment as well as investments from other agencies that continue to support our mission.
There's two pieces here that I want to definitely talk about. The first one is ensuring adequate support, adequate infrastructure, bandwidth. How do you do that? Because as we're seeing through, let's say, the FCC and the broadband initiative, getting high-speed internet access out to rural parts of America is not an easy thing. I mean, you're relying on satellite, or you're relying on piggybacking on other networks?
So first, let me clarify. When we say adequate access, sometimes that's 56K dial-up. We still have sites on 56K dial-up. We do use satellite. We piggyback on whatever networks we can out there. We're responsible for the wide area network that reaches into the communities, but that last mile, as it's called, is really the responsibility at the facility level. Over the years, however, you're probably aware that there has been some investment into infrastructure into the rural arenas, and we've been able to successfully leverage that based on former FCC and other dollars that have gone into those communities. In fact, because healthcare is so, in a sense, infrastructure dependent, we probably have one of the most comprehensive networks. However, we stand to gain tremendously from the current investment that's going into the community, and it's a gain that we have to have. Our network utilization has tripled in the last 4 years. In fact, I was just looking at that data this morning. Our concern is that as telemedicine becomes more important, as the delivery of certain clinical services such as mental health become more dependent on access to video conferencing, that we need to ensure that our network can adequately support that. In addition, however, because we have lots of dropped communication related to access to broadband, related to inadequate sustenance of broadband 24/7. We do run our health IT system as predominantly a client-server application, and that's because we can't ensure for many of our facilities that they will be able to have 99.999 access to uptime on the network. Because they're relying on the health information technology system to give them appropriate information for the delivery of care to that patient in front of them, we've elected to stay with that model for a health IT system as opposed to an ASP model or a web-based model. We've actually looking at that, and what we're hoping is that as the broadband infrastructure and investment goes more into rural areas in America, at some point we will be able to transition our sites that are stable to that model. But your question is really important. When we survey our patients, what we have found out is that independent of the stats that are out there, which would indicate that, you know, over 60% of Americans have access to personal use of the Internet, our patients report that approximately 24% of them have access to the Internet. Now, it's interesting because some of those communities where they report a low rate, we in fact know that there's access either in the schools, in the libraries, or in the chapter houses. But what that means is that the patient, regardless of if that access is 5 miles down the road, are perceiving that they don't have access. And that's because of the last mile. It's because they don't have access into their homes. So unlike in the urban areas where broadband access is fairly ubiquitous, most homes with adequate financial resources would be able to have access to their home. In many of the rural communities, you still have that lacking infrastructure to get it into the home situation. So for us, healthcare intensive, wanting to engage the patient, make sure the patient's activated, that really does require at some point that we're going to be able to touch the lives of those patients in their home, which is where, you know, the majority of health begins and ends.
You mentioned the client server app. Now, just to make sure we understand what that means from your perspective, that means that the client is on your desktop, the server is in the building, and that information exchanged that way, and then that server updates another set of servers every day, every evening, or how does that setup actually work more specifically?
Okay, well, your definition is exactly right. There's client app on the desktop, there's server or a small server farm in the facility. Occasionally, the servers will support other nearby facilities. For instance, a diabetic clinic that may be at the tribal health department that's a half mile away. The data is maintained there as a core, we call it PCC, our patient care component. It's really the equivalent of an HDR, a health data repository. That data is sustained there. Obviously, that data is used for many things. It can be used, for instance, in many states. It's used for a nightly export that goes to the state immunization registry to ensure our immunizations are bidirectionally flowing. It can be used right now. We have an H1N1 surveillance application out there that every night at 2 in the morning exports data that was obtained during the last 24 hours, and that goes to our epidemiological people in Albuquerque. In addition, obviously, it's not so obvious, but we do bill for our services. Even though we have an appropriation from Congress, we have billing authority for Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. And so we do initiate billing. Usually that's once a day again. And finally, we do what we call a national data warehouse, which is a mirror image of what are on the local servers, but a very defined data set. So RPMS itself collects a huge amount of data. Approximately 5% of that is exported on a regular basis out to either the national data warehouse in Albuquerque or to a regional data warehouse if people have that running. That export is supposed to be done at least monthly, and we use that predominantly for administrative reports. Now, that is separate from if we have a health information exchange. And in fact, we do have facilities that are tribally operated that are participating in health information exchanges. The two that are the most robust right now, one is in Oklahoma and one is in North Carolina. Those two facilities are allowing for on-the-fly queries, obviously with appropriate security and privacy, into their data set so that there is appropriate health information exchange at the point of care where the patient is presenting, once again, given the appropriate security and privacy. Those two areas are able to do that because they're in parts of the country where there really is adequate broadband and they don't have 56K dial-up. They're running T1s and T3s.
So I know you'll be paying attention to the work that the FCC does with the broadband, and then also I definitely want to talk a little bit later in our interview about health IT, because that seems like when you talk about the health information exchange, that's exactly the type of health IT that we're talking about that's going on within the country in some areas. But first, we're going to have to take a quick break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Dr. Teresa Cullen, the CIO of the Indian Health Service within the Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now. Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Dr. Teresa Cullen, the CIO of the Indian Health Service. Now, Dr. Cullen, before break, we were talking about how the Indian Health Service is set up and what your responsibilities are for around the country in terms of making sure that there's at least adequate or some network infrastructure, some network support. Let's talk about your background a little, because obviously you're a medical doctor first. But how did you get into technology? How does that perspective of a current MD play into your current role as an information technology specialist expert?
You know, I really like when people ask me that question because I'm a doc first, second, and last. My commitment is to being a primary care physician. I'm a trained and board certified family medicine doc with additional certification in addiction medicine, and I've in fact practiced with Indian Health Service since 1984, and I still sustain a practice right now. My transition into IT probably happened at the very beginning, because Indian Health Service is a system that provides comprehensive care, resource-constrained environment, fairly difficult to function in, and there's never enough staff, there's never enough resources. So when you have that kind of environment, what you do is you look around pretty quickly and see how can I make it more efficient, more effective, and ensure that we're meeting our goal of achieving health equity for an underserved population. And there's lots of ways to do that, but in the clinical setting, the one thing that I think has been proven over time is really leveraging health information technology makes a huge difference. And the way it makes a difference is it enables you to more quickly access data, more quickly act on data, and then track what your outcomes are and if what you did made any difference. So 1984, I worked at one place, 1986, where we didn't have any health information technology. 1986, I transferred to a facility where, in fact, we had an electronic health record back then, a long time ago. Was paper-based, but produced an electronic health summary, enabled electronic ordering. It's hard to believe that it was that long ago, but it was. And my first day, I became enamored with the difference it made in my life, my ability to quickly recognize what was wrong with patients, what mistakes were being made, how I could mitigate them, and how I could move on. So I was really involved from the beginning. In 1999, after having been a medical director for 5 years, I transferred into our Office of Information Technology as a medical informatics person, became our senior medical informatics consultant, and in 2006 was selected to be our chief information officer. We're a health delivery system, and everybody in the field knows I still practice. So what that means is I know how hard their lives are. I know what it means when I send something out there that doesn't work. I know what it means when I send something out there that isn't usable. Or I know what it means when I can make their lives easier because it's making my life easier as a provider. So in our setting, having a clinical provider, and I don't necessarily think it has to be a physician, but having a clinical provider as the chief information officer has done reams of good for the field. They contact me a lot. I know what their issues are because I still practice. I know how hard it is. And we as an agency have just made this commitment to more effectively leverage our investment in health by more effectively utilizing health information technology. We have a great relationship with the Veterans Health Administration. We've relied on them over the years. Our PMS, our health IT system, is really a sister cousin to VISTA, which is their health IT system. Obviously, we provide care from cradle to grave, so we have lots of needs that the VA doesn't have in terms of health information technology. But as a provider, what I've brought to the table, and I bring it in every discussion I have, whether it's within our agency, at the department level, or with external partners, is that recognition that if it's not usable, if it doesn't make a difference to the provider and to the patient, you just shouldn't make the investment in it.
So very interesting. Obviously, being a practicing family physician as well as a provider of health IT brings you a perspective, obviously, that makes a big difference to your constituents. Let's talk about some of the priorities of the Indian Health Service that you have over the next 6 or 9 months in terms of getting more technology out there, upgrading systems, whatever it is. What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, I think that we're taking our direction and establishing a glide path based on the national initiatives. And the national initiative, as you know, in health IT, as endorsed by the High Tech Act, is really how to get health IT in a more meaningful way into the hands of end users, and I would add to that into the hands of patients. So our goals in the next 6 to 9 months are to ensure that we will be able to meet the 2011 definitions of certification and meaningful use, still being refined, that will be promulgated by the Office of the National Coordinator and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Now, we obviously believe we're already doing meaningful use, and I think that will be the case. There are some things that we haven't done that we are initiating right now. A personal health record that is internet-based. If you'll recall, only 24% of our patients have internet access. When you look at the utilization of personal health records in the private sector, what you see is about 5% of patients on average utilize them. That would mean that 1% of our patients would use a PHR. Because of that limited use, it was not a priority. However, it has now established itself as a priority within our setting, and I also think in the national agenda. So we will be developing and deploying a personal health record. We will be working with ensuring interoperability through the Nationwide Health Information Exchange, the NIN. We are committed to, like I previously said, meaningful use. We already do electronic clinical quality reporting. We've done that for over 10 years. We probably have more experience than anyone else does in a large integrated network of how to do that and do it well. What that means is that we just are a little higher up, and we already have provider buy-in that electronic measurement of clinical quality is important. So I don't think that that will present an issue for us. However, the one thing we do need to do is ensure we have an infrastructure that can not only support all that internally, but can support our ability to appropriately exchange information with either outside consultants, with patients, and obviously with CMS as it comes to the meaningful use incentives. So our priorities are fairly robust and fairly large. I believe that we will be able to meet them. We've been working closely within our agency with the department, with the Office of the National Coordinator and other partners to ensure that we can stay on top of whatever comes out so that we can ensure access to the incentives for our facilities and our providers. So in that way, our priorities are really being shaped by the national agenda. The one other priority we have that is spoken in the national agenda, but is probably has a real high emphasis in our system, which is health equity. So how do we use health IT and infrastructure not only to meet meaningful use and get access to incentives, but really to ensure access to care to our patients as well as access to quality care? So part of that are initiatives in telehealth, an emphasis on using telehealth to improve access to care in facilities where, for instance, we may not have a psychiatrist, and mental health disorders may play a predominant part in morbidity and mortality for those patients. And finally, the other thing we are really cautious of, we're really sensitive to, is public health awareness, early sentinel awareness. And the reason why that's important is because we have lots of epidemics. We take care of a population that has a high disease burden, maybe rural, is by border in both Canada and Mexico. So we want to ensure that we can use our health IT system to give us early recognition of any disease states that may be putting a community at risk. And those can be traditional things like pertussis, but they can also be the atypicals like H1N1, where we are really trying to get ahead of the game in terms of sentinel awareness using health IT.
All right, we're going to have to take another break. When we come back, I definitely want to touch upon some of those priorities because I think there's a lot of good stuff you guys are working on. But you are listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Dr. Teresa Cullen, the CIO of the Indian Health Service.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Listen to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, throughout the day for the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Join the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Jane Norris, mornings from 6 to 10. In Depth with Francis Rose from 1 to 3. And the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, afternoons from 3 to 7. Find all the news you need 24-7 at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Dr. Teresa Cullen, the CIO of the Indian Health Service in HHS. Now, Dr. Cullen, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities, what you hope to accomplish over the next 6 to 9 months, and obviously everything around is health IT, health IT, and health IT. One thing that you mentioned was the development of a personal health record, and I know from past experiences in covering health IT, the Defense Department is working with Microsoft, Google, maybe some others around a internet-based personal health record. Are you guys doing anything similar to that?
We, in fact, are. In fact, we've had discussions with Madigan Army Hospital, which is one of the pilot sites for the PHR. And we've also had discussions with CMS, Medicare, and Medicaid, because they have a few pilot PHR programs out there. Our initiative is designed to do somewhat comparable to what Madigan is doing, using an outsourced private vendor to support the storage like Microsoft Health Vault and designing our own front end for our patients. And the reason why we felt the need to design our own, we do most of our applications that are patient-centric at a sixth grade literacy level to just accommodate the differences and the spectrum of our patients in terms of health literacy. So our plan at this point, with appropriate privacy and security, and I just have to keep saying that because we're attentive to those needs at the federal level, is to launch the PHR by the end of 2010 fiscal year, as we go into that next month, using at this point one of the private vendors as our partner to move that ahead. Now, that's a little different than what some of the other federal partners have done, and we've elected to really establish this public-private partnership because we think in the long run it's a more sustainable option for us. Our hope is that the population of the public, the personal health record will include our clinical data, not our billing data, but our clinical data from RPMS, which is our health IT solution. And in addition, it will include, we're hoping, our community health data. Right now, we not only aggregate data at the personal level, meaning we collect the individual patient's data, but we have a secondary use of that data by aggregating at a community level that allows us, for instance, to do our early sentinel awareness. Our hope is that when our patients sign on to the PHR, not only will they be able to see their data, they'll also be and appropriate alerts, but they'll be able to get alerts about the community in which they reside, and that will hopefully be actionable for them.
You mentioned privacy and security a couple times. That's obviously a big issue for all of health IT. One thing that CMS is doing with MedVirginia, you're probably familiar with that pilot, is really putting the onus on the user to say, yes, I want to share my data, or no, I don't. Have you guys figured out how you're going to tackle those two issues yet, or is that still something that you're looking at?
We're still looking at it, but we believe that other than public health data, the patient must consent, and our system must be able to accommodate that consent. Now, you know, as you know, there's real issues with healthcare data, that ability to tease out alcohol, substance use, behavioral health, HIV data, which we have to do under federal guidance and federal legislation. We're able to do that to a large extent because we, at this point, can segregate out our behavioral health data. The issue becomes when somebody comes in the emergency room, they come in for alcohol intoxication. The current interpretation of the data of the law would indicate that you actually can share that because they're in a clinical setting. They're not in an alcohol, substance abuse, or behavioral health treatment center. But some of it gets a little confusing, and it's an issue that's not only confronting us. I don't think anybody's figured out. So, friends, I'll give you another example. So if you get Septra, which is an antibiotic, and you get that because you have a skin infection, you can also get that same antibiotic because you have a certain kind of pneumonia that's associated with AIDS. The data system may or may not be able to pull out that antibiotic. And given that there's antibiotic interactions, do you really want to pull it out? Because you could get somebody in real trouble if you're giving them a drug that interacts with it. So I think that there's a lot of what we call clinical decision support, artificial intelligence, that sometimes we, and I'll include myself because I'm a federal employee, don't think about when we promulgate certain guidance about privacy. So I think that those are issues that are going to take a while to work out. But obviously we will be compliant with privacy and security, and our strategy is to have patient consent, recorded patient consent, before any data is shared. The caveat to that, though, is I think it's important to people to know, is that in public health data, the same restrictions don't imply. So immunizations are considered public health data. So in the vast majority of immunization exchanges in the country, there's not individual patient consent. There's the belief that immunizations and adequate immunizations are important to prevent epidemics. So the sharing of that data, and it's not anonymous data, is okay and can be shared under the public health laws.
Well, I think that's a really good place to end our conversation for today. This has been fascinating. I've learned a tremendous amount about what you guys do and all the challenges you face and all the good things you're doing now and hope to do in the future. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our special guest today was Dr. Teresa Cullen, the CIO of the Indian Health Service in the Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Cullen's also a Rear Admiral in the U.S. Public Health Service. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here. I really appreciate the opportunity to share.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, worldwide on federalnewsradio.com.